So, countless people have said just what a significant shift it can be to find this attitude of compassion for ourselves, and that we can find that there's a habit of being more critical, being more judgmental. Being quite hard on ourselves, really. And yeah, almost everybody I come across says that they have this to some extent. It's just a kind of, yeah, habitual way of being in the world, that we can set ourselves quite high standards that we then judge ourselves about. There's a gap between how we feel we ought to be and how we are, how we ought to feel and how we feel. And it can play out in all kinds of areas of our life, you know, whether it's that we feel we should have done more with our work or been different in how we were with our families or countless, countless areas. I've even noticed it in myself. If I'm feeling tired or something, I don't know if you'd notice this, but sometimes if I'm feeling tired, there can be a voice that pops into my head that says something like, oh, you know, what have you got to be tired about? You know, come on. And then it's like, oh, actually, just finding a different voice, even with those sort of simple everyday things like being tired, like, oh, so you're tired. Oh, it's okay. Yeah, what do you need? You know, maybe you need to rest, or maybe it'd be nice to have a bit of a walk to wake yourself up a bit. Or, it's okay. You've had a lot on. But that difference of voice from, you know, you're tired, what have you got to be tired about? To, oh, you know, what might help? What might support you? It's okay. Makes such a difference to our lives, to shift in this direction towards compassion for ourselves. And one person who's really devoted herself to studying self-compassion is Kristin Neff, N-E-F-F, Kristin Neff. And she describes three components of self-compassion, and I find these very, very helpful. So the first is actually mindfulness, which means in this instance, you know, recognizing what's happening, recognizing that the body is like this, that the feelings are like this, that these are the thoughts that are present, that this moment is how it is. Yeah. So that recognition of how things are in the moment. And when it's a difficult moment, when it's a painful moment, then mindfulness includes the recognition, this is a moment of suffering. This is a moment of suffering. So we start to tune in to that aspect of our experience, whether it's quite small or subtle, or whether it feels quite intense. But we can meet that with this awareness. Oh, this is how it is right now. These thoughts, these feelings, these sensations. And the second element she speaks about is called common humanity. Common humanity. And in the reflection, it would then say, everybody has tough times. Everybody has difficult things to deal with from time to time. Everybody has pains and losses in their life. This is part of the human condition. Yeah. So that kind of reflection. And it's fascinating to notice that one of the things that can happen when we are having a more difficult time is that we lose sense of that. I mean, there are so many billions of people on the planet. Yeah. If we think about it, I mean, as soon as we remember that, you know, at any single moment, a significant number of those are having a hard time. But when it's us, when it's me or you, there's something puzzling that happens in our minds that sort of closes down, and the sense of me gets really big, and the sense that it's only me going through this, nobody else could possibly understand how this is. That gets quite enlarged. So this is really coming from a feeling of being isolated, being separate, being on our own with it. And when you start to notice that, it's quite something to see in our experience. Because as I say, we know rationally speaking, that can't be true. Lots of people are having difficult things to deal with. But it feels as if it's just me. I'm on my own. And so this is how this reflection on common humanity is so skillful, because it's turning our mind in the opposite direction of that recognition. This is part of what it is. We could even reflect on the Buddha's teaching on the Four Noble Truths, the first noble truth. He says, we don't always get what we want. We get what we don't want. We have the pains of sickness, of old age, of death. So you can contemplate this, that this is true for every single person who's ever lived and who will live. It's part of being human that there are losses, pains, disappointments, things that don't go according to plan, sickness to deal with in ourselves or and in our loved ones. This is part of life. And there's a teaching in a very famous teaching in the suttas where the Buddha speaks to a woman who's bereaved. She's just lost her child. And the teaching he gives her is very much on this teaching of common humanity, because she says, "Can you help me? Can you help me? What can you do?" Her initial thought is she wants thinks the Buddha maybe to bring the child back to life. And he says, "I can help you, but you need to find a seed, a mustard seed, from a house in which nobody's ever died." So of course she goes around the village and says, "Can you help me out?" And they say, "Well, we'd love to help you, but sadly we lost our uncle recently." And she goes to the next place, and grandparents have gone. And so she goes around every single house, and then there's this recognition that actually everybody goes through this bereavement. And this doesn't, of course, take away the pain. It doesn't negate it. It doesn't somehow mean it doesn't matter or that we don't grieve deeply for those we love. But it does mean that that's held within this broader perspective of common humanity. So the Buddha's teaching there again, he can't do what she initially wanted to bring the child back to life. But what he does do is, using this very skillful teaching, open up this new perspective that this is part of being human, part of being human. And there is a kind of, again, the words are very tricky here, but there is a kind of healing in that, a kind of healing in that. Again, the care is needed here. Doesn't mean there's no grief. It doesn't mean the grief isn't painful. It doesn't mean the loss isn't significant. But there's a kind of healing in knowing this common humanity, recalling that. And so the third of these reflections from Kristin Neff is kindness. The third component of self-compassion is kindness. So we may express ourselves in saying something like, "Well, and may I be kind to myself? May I be kind to myself?" In some of the mindfulness-based courses, they ask the question, "How can I best take care of myself?" Which is a great question to come back to, again and again. What do I need in this moment? What's going to really support me? How can I bring kindness to this moment? And of course, what do I need? Maybe all kinds of things. It might be speaking to a good friend. It might be, really soothing ourselves along, soak in the bath. It might be listening to a talk from Dharma Seed. It might be going for a walk if you like to do that. It might be, eating some very, delicious food. It might be listening to some favorite music. But all kinds of things. Of course, you may well have your own list that could be quite different from mine. But I think it's very helpful to see these things as really essential. That makes sense, you know. So, because it's easy to see those things as kind of luxuries. Oh, I might do that if I get round to it. But these things that we do to nourish and resource ourselves, they really are, well, they're essential to helping us to stay grounded and steady in the midst of that which is more difficult. It's that principle I said earlier, you know, we need to be resourced in order to face what is tough. Yeah. So may I be kind to myself. And Kristin Neff goes on to describe different ways we might be kind to ourselves. I mean, so there's some of the activities that I mentioned. There are also these practices that you may have explored where you use a soothing touch. You use a soothing touch. And probably the most common one is to place a hand on the heart. So as I do that now, and if you wanted to experiment with me and do it at the same time, feel free. If you'd rather leave it for another time, that's okay too. But as I do that now, and I might even move my hand a little bit, you know, there's a sense that this is a gesture of care. I can feel the warmth of the hand. You can begin to, yeah, let in that feeling of care. And you can do that also, people might do, they might place their hands on the face, there might be their hands on the back of the neck. And of course, many things can be there. One that I've often done, because you can do it quite discreetly if you're on a bus or something, is this one. It looks like you're folding your arms, but actually the hands are kind of there. Yeah. You can bring those down. Oh. But it's a really significant movement from the habit of this is a tough moment. What have I done wrong? This is a tough moment. Maybe I'm to blame. A little bit like the example I gave you from me, you know, I'm feeling tired. What have you got to feel tired about? You know, or pull yourself together, or you know, you're overreacting, or you know, all of these kind of things, ways that others or ourselves can be with ourselves in a moment of pain. This is different. It's can we meet that? Can we meet it with kindness? And yeah, just to say a little more about how helpful this is. Again, drawing on the work of Kristin Neff, but she distinguishes self-compassion from self-esteem. Yeah, self-compassion from self-esteem. And generally speaking, we might think of self-esteem as feeling, you know, being a pretty good thing, really. We feel good about ourselves. But the drawback of this is that it tends to be dependent on some kind of success or achievement or feeling I've done something to deserve this. So I feel good about myself because I've passed my exam. I feel good about myself because I had this success at work. I feel good about myself because, you know, I looked after my family. I saw my family. Took care of them. Yeah, or I feel good about myself because, yeah. But anything like that can really also trigger feelings of comparison, both with how we used to be or how we ought to be, and also with other people. So there's a feeling of it being dependent on something. So it has an instability about it, yeah. I'll only feel good about myself if I keep passing my exams and work keeps going okay and I keep healthy and, you know, nothing gets more difficult with my family or so there's a whole list of conditions that are in place. But as we know, as students of the Dharma, you know, conditions are inherently unstable. So a sense of self-esteem is inherently unstable. And again, to use the perspective of the Buddhist psychology, you know, that is trying to make a solid, fixed sense of self out of changing and in substantial conditions. So when we try to do that, grasp that, there's me, I'm a person who's got it all together. Well, it doesn't, is nothing solid to grasp there. Yeah, nothing to solid to grasp. You even hear that, don't you? Somebody writes a successful book and then they might like it and enjoy the book launch. And then it's not long before somebody says, oh, well, what's your next one going to be about? And you've got the pressure of following it up. So there's countless examples like that. But yeah, and this is self-esteem. It's like we're kind of working hard to maintain an image of I'm a person who's all right, has got it together. But it's hard work. So in contrast to that, self-compassion is more unconditional. So it's not, I need to do something in order to deserve kindness, but this is where we begin, yeah? Kind of, yeah, just in virtue of being here, being a being who feels pleasure and pain, who's thrown into a world and, you know, things that are in our control, things that are out of our control, has to deal with the inevitable pains of life. Yeah. Just for no reason at all, we can bring care and compassion. Yeah. So we lose the feeling of the fragility of the self-esteem. And final point I'll make about her work at this stage that I really liked is that she also says that self-compassion can be a skillful way to motivate ourselves. Skillful way to motivate ourselves, because it's not uncommon for people to have the fear, well, all this kindness sounds okay, but would I ever get out of bed in the morning, or would I ever do anything, or what about my bad habits and things? And she says, and actually quotes some research on this, that self-compassion can be a more effective motivation than self-judgment. And you can check this out yourself. Let's take an example. Let's say you decided to drink a little bit less alcohol. If you drink, you might think, okay, well, that might support me. So through judgment, it's like, you know, what are you doing drinking that again? You know, you're a meditator, you shouldn't be doing that. That's not setting a good example. Come on, you know. So you're sort of, it's a lot of stick in the mind, if you like, yeah. But the self-compassionate voice would be something more like, oh yeah, well, you've had a tough day and I can really see why you might want to have that drink. And, you know, that maybe that would be nice for you, but I'm also concerned about, you know, maybe you've done that a lot over the last few days or weeks. I'm wondering if there's something that would help you even more, something that would be more supportive, another way you could relax. What might that be? But can you see those different voices? There's a sort of critical, harsh voice that says, you know, look at you again, messing up, to, ah, oh, there might be something else that nourishes you more. Let's have a look. It's understandable that you might want to do that. But it's really, again, very supportive to find that shift. And we can do that, by the way, with our daily meditation practice. I don't know if you found that, but, you know, there can be the voice, oh, I really ought to be doing 2 hours a day, otherwise I'm, just a sort of lightweight and come on, do more. And that's, you know, again, that voice can really come in. And again, it can be very skillful to work in the opposite direction, you know. How would it be to do that? Let's get to the cushion. Let me see how it goes. Yeah, get to the cushion and see what it's like. Stay there for a bit. How's that doing? And yeah, so kindness as a motivation, compassion as a motivation, is not only more pleasant, but interestingly, more effective in the long term. I think a lot of us feel that harsh voice, it's like, yeah, we can do it for a bit. And then after a while, you just say, oh, leave me alone. Leave me alone. I'm going to do what I want. Yeah. So the compassionate motivation can be more sustainable as well. So really bringing care and compassion to ourselves, you know, with mindfulness, acknowledging the moments of suffering, holding our suffering in a different perspective, seeing it as part of the wider story of the inevitable pains of human life, so freeing ourselves from blaming ourselves for times when it's painful. And then the shift from the harsh critical voice that sort of trying to knock us into shape to the caring voice that nurtures and supports. So we're going to do another practice in a moment, but let's have a minute or two, or let's say 2 minutes. Again, if you want to just stand to take care of the body, it might be nice just to stand for a moment before we come back to our seat.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.